You're listening to a podcast from The National.
It lasted 22 games, but like all great things, Manchester City's unbeaten run this Premier League season has come to an end. Liverpool's thrilling 4-3 win at Anfield proved the end of the road. Philippe who? While Liverpool thrived without one of their star men, the same could not be said of Arsenal, who slumped a defeat at Bournemouth in what is likely to be the last game with the absent Alexis Sanchez on their books. 8 points off the top four, out of the FA Cup, and with their best player imminently departing, can Arsene Wenger reverse the club's fortunes? It was a more successful weekend for Arsenal's North London rivals Tottenham, who made light work of an Everton side their manager described as unprofessional in their performance. It's now no wins in five for Sam Allardyce. Another manager who will not be pleased with his team's display is Antonio Conte, who saw Chelsea lucky to escape Stamford Bridge with a goalless draw against Leicester City. At the other end of the table, there was plenty for Alan Pardew to dance about after recording his first win as West Bromwich Albion manager, while West Ham thrashed Huddersfield Town. This is the Extra Time podcast. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me in the studio to discuss all the latest from the Premier League this week is Steve Luckings.
Hello, mate.
And Graham K. Gill.
Hey, John.
How you guys doing?
I'm good, mate. You sound like you're out of breath after that intro.
Well, that's a bit lengthy, but yeah, there's plenty to pack in. It was a busy weekend, wasn't it? Well, there's only one place to start, isn't there? Let's start at Anfield. I mean, take it away, Steve. I mean, where do you start with that?
Well, firstly, what a fantastic game. It really was thrilling, edge-of-your-seat stuff. And, you know, full credit to Liverpool. They did deserve a victory. But I really think City emerged with a lot of credit in the bank for their performance in defeat. You know, even at 4-1 down, the players, you could tell, never thought they were beaten for 1 second, kept going till the end. And, you know, as a neutral, I was willing them on to do it. You know, Sergio Aguero's header at the end there that hit the side netting, you know, it made me hold my breath. So it was a magnificent performance from both sets of players. Liverpool were, you know, they had that kind of 8-minute spell where just everything went right for them. And I think there is a case, you know, Liverpool were, you know, they got the luck of the green with Firmino's challenge on John Stones for the second goal. But yeah, it was just a magnificent game. It's one of those, and you remember them games between Liverpool and Newcastle in the 90s. The again 4-3 scorelines. It was just one of those. It'll go down as a Premier League classic and one that will live long in the memory.
It's exactly what Jurgen Klopp needed as well, wasn't it? With Coutinho having just departed, Graham.
Absolutely, it's a perfect response. And the way they played, like I think we've said in the podcast before, we were quite confident they could cope, but to do that against Man City was fantastic. And in a way, it'll be interesting to see how other Premier League teams react to how Liverpool played against City and that, because Liverpool kind of gave City a dose of their own medicine with the pressing game, because particularly in that key period, Steve said, that 8-10 minutes, Liverpool made that miss City make mistakes.
The way Otamendi was caught in possession, they were on them, weren't they? The front three, they just didn't give them any respite, you say, so high up the pitch.
It was terrific to watch, and so you've got to be incredibly fit to be able to do that and sustain that, and they did that. But then also you've got to be able to take advantage of it, and the clinical nature of the finishes as well. And Salah's goal was fantastic, because it's so easy just to panic, oh, keeper's off the line, and just hit it.
Yeah.
But it was just so, there was no doubt that was going in. It was beautiful to watch.
Do you think we'll now see more teams trying to do that at least? I mean, even if you go down in almost like a blaze of glory, try and press City, try and kind of stick it up them, if you will. Do you think we'll kind of see a bit more of that this season?
I think more,
the rest of the season?
I think more and more teams have been doing it. I just think Liverpool have actually, you know, come out of it successfully. I think, you know, if you look back to the Crystal Palace game, the run could have ended there. Milivojevic, you know, took a very average penalty that Edison managed to save. So I think teams have been going a little bit more full on for them. And the thing with Pep Guardiola's side is they don't take a safety first approach. So they are going to get caught in possession. You know, more often than not, they're going to absolutely trounce teams, which is exactly what they've done. But in one-off games, you know, as Liverpool have exposed, you can catch them very high up the pitch, in possession, so many times. You know, between Edison, Otamendi and Stones, they were passing to each other literally on Edison's byline. And again, if you know, fair enough, Guardiola wants them to play this brand of football, playing out from the back, which is fine, because when it comes off, it is superb. But occasionally, and I think he will take this, you know, we were advocating, weren't they, that they were going to go the whole season undefeated.
You get swept up in it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. But the one person who wasn't was Guardiola. you know, he's been saying all along that the title's not won, we're not going to be in the Invincibles like Arsenal. Yeah, and Richard Jolly's wrote a piece, so it's not a reality check because City didn't need it. Guardiola always saw this coming. His Barcelona team's got defeated. His Bayern Munich team's got defeated. And his City team had been defeated. And, you know, like I said, if that game had gone on another 5 minutes longer, City could have quite easily got an equaliser. So, yeah, you do have to take them full on. I think Jurgen Klopp said afterwards that there's no point sitting back and hoping City don't score a goal, because City are always going to score goals. You've got to take the game to them. It's exactly what they did. As Gray has said, the front three were just tigerish. They were playing so high up the pitch. Yeah, they were on City straight away and they forced them into mistakes. And yeah, it's a blueprint other teams will do well to adopt. But again, not every team has the ability of a front three like Liverpool.
Do you think it's one defeat, as Steve says, and Guardiola was expecting. Do you think there's a chance that it could have a bit of a destabilising effect, Graham?
It'll be interesting to see if they went behind to Burnley like they did in the FA Cup, because it's Burnley they've got next. If they went behind after 10 minutes there, it'd be interesting to see what the character's like. But personally, no. I they've kind of been like wavering a little bit in terms of like the dominance of September, October. They were putting 6 and 7 past teams, appears to have faded a little bit. But in a way, it may sound daft, losing a game should never be a good thing, but in a way, it's taken one big thing away from City, because they've got a hell of a lot of big games still to come. Because if they're in the business end of the Champions League in April, there's a good chance it could be in the FA Cup still at that point. It would be difficult for them to have to deal with that and possibly be going for the Invincibles as well, because if you've got to game 33 or game 34 and you're still unbeaten, you're not going to give that up, are you?
No, really? You'll be thinking about it. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
So getting it out of the way, and they're still, obviously we're talking about this before United play Stoke, and if United win, it could be down to 12 points, but they've still got a hell of an advantage. And obviously we have seen those kind of leads slip in the past, but it's very difficult to see this being more than just a fantastic performance by Liverpool, and Liverpool being in the right place at the right time.
Regardless of the result or not, do you think that Guardiola still needs to dip into the transfer market for a centre-back? I mean, it is an area that looks a bit thin.
No, I don't think he does. And yeah, just going back to the game, I think the second goal was absolutely crucial and the turning point of the match. And I think if you look at John Stones' decision, mate, I think he's come on a great deal under Guardiola. I really think he's starting to look the part that maybe we didn't see too much of him from last season, but clearly Guardiola identified when he signed him. I think if Stones makes a better decision, he either, you know, if he's going to be strong enough, then he's got to be stronger than what he did against Firmino, or he's got to be clever enough to go down under that challenge. So in terms of your frontline defenders, I think Otamendi and Stones are developing into a good partnership. I think, you know, again, Kompany, when he comes back in, I think he's the first name on the team sheet. But I think Mangala is decent backup. So I don't think it's something that they do need to do. But all of a sudden, with Fabian Delph going off injured, you know, I know they have Danilo, but with Benjamin Mendy still obviously out for a long time, I wonder if that's an area he may look at, whether a short-term signing or a long-term. But yeah, I don't think there's, again, you know, everyone needs to stop their knees from jerking on this in terms of what it's going to do for City. Like, City is still going to win the league.
Oh, yeah.
They're, what, 1 foot in the door of the League Cup final. And they're going great in Europe and the FA Cup. So, yeah, I don't think there's any real need for Guardiola to panic. As I say, I thought City were fantastic in the way they tried to come back. I thought Kevin De Bruyne had as good a game as he's had all season, even in a losing team. So, yeah, I don't think there's major surgery that needs doing to that squad.
What about on the other side? Do you think that Jurgen Klopp might not go into the transfer market to replace Coutinho, given that performance?
Said last week, didn't we? I think Coutinho is the easiest of that so-called Fab Four to replace. And so it proved. Again, we can't just judge it over one game. But yeah, I thought Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain had a fantastic game. He really did. He really drove Liverpool high up the pitch. But yeah, I mean, when you've got £140 million burning in your back pocket, there is a temptation to go out and spend it.
So Liverpool started well without Coutinho, but in the absence of Alexis Sanchez, who looks like he is going to be departing someday soon. Arsenal really struggled, guys, at Bournemouth. I mean, what does Wenger do? I mean, clearly his star man is on his way out, as it very much seems likely now. Big defeat, they fall further behind the top four. I mean, what are you kind of making of all this? I mean, he has to make a statement signing, surely. What else can he do to sort of arrest their situation?
You've got to think it has to be a signing. Like, there's obviously been wild speculation over the weekend about Manchester United now being favourites and Mkhitaryan possibly being part of a deal that could come. And the only fear with Mkhitaryan is it could be more of what they've got. A guy who's great for five games a season, then when he's not up for it, just disappears completely. And so it's a difficult one because he felt, in a way, Sunday was a chance for the rest of the side to kind of demonstrate to him and the fans, yeah, we can cope without Sanchez. That's probably what Wenger was thinking. Like, you know, strong statement of intent to the fans, we can cope. And instead, it was a demonstration that they really can't cope.
Yeah. I thought the performance of Alexandre Lacazette really... Well, actually, the performance of Danny Welbeck when he was tackled by the corner flag probably summed Arsenal up there. But I thought Alexandre Lacazette's performance... there's a striker who's low on confidence at the moment. And the fact that he kept dropping deeper and deeper to get possession, I wonder if that was him, you know, not backing himself enough to get on the end of a chance in the box. Do you know what I mean? Because that is what, I don't think he contributes too much outside of the 18-yard area. I think he's lethal in front of goal. But I notice the more and more subdued performance of him, which I think, you know, like you say, Sanchez is looks inevitably to be out the door. Mesut Ozil may or may not follow suit before the end of the transfer window. So when your frontline premier striker is displaying that kind of level of confidence, I think that's an even bigger concern for Wenger.
It's tough times over at Arsenal, but good weekend for Tottenham. Steve, you want to take on this one?
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic, as Tottenham were. Everton were absolutely shambolic. I think the fourth goal, you know, as pretty as it was with the flicks and the tricks and round the back door and whatever else, I think Everton made it very, very easy for Spurs. You know, there was very little resistance every time Spurs poured forward. You know, full credit to Spurs. They can only beat what was in front of them. And again, they looked absolutely terrific. It looks like they've finally conquered the fear of Wembley. They're starting to put away teams that they should be putting away. I just wonder, you know, I know they're only... What are they, 3 points off of the teams above them in the Champions League places? I just wonder, you know, 3 points is obviously nothing. It's only a win. They're fifth now. I just wonder if they can make up the ground on the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool to clinch that last spot.
Did Harry Kane become Tottenham's all-time leading Premier League scorer?
Premier League scorer, yeah. Goal number 98, went ahead of Teddy Sheringham, and I think he joined a select band of strikers, which I'm sure are Thierry Henry, Alan Shearer, and one other player who escapes me, probably Rooney, to have scored 20 league goals in four consecutive seasons. So congratulations to him. You know, what a wonderful season he's having.
It's literally like every week he scores goals. There's more records falling all over the place. What player he is.
Yeah, he will get to 100 Premier League goals probably next weekend, won't he? You know, he's really on fire at the moment. Pretty unstoppable. And it's a good period, I think, for Maurizio Pochettino when you consider that long-term absentees like Victor Wanyama are coming back into the side slowly, and from what I hear, Toby Alderweireld could be in contention for the Champions League last 16 game against Juventus. So, yeah, they're getting some massive players back at a really important time for them.
Bright start for Everton under Allardyce, Graham, but, I mean, that's now no wins in five. I think three defeats on the bounce. He was really unhappy with their performance.
I think it's just a lot... We used the term reality check earlier about Man City and not really being one, but it just feels like Allardyce's new manager syndrome has kind of worn off. And you think, in a way, Everton has been very good at beating everyone they should have beaten, and Tottenham have kind of highlighted just how much of a problem still is with that squad and how unbalanced they were from what Koeman left them.
There's just no goals in that side, is there? I mean, I know Cenk Tosun, I thought looked pretty impressive. You know, he ran the channels pretty hard. He was certainly eager, but there's no goals. You just don't know where they're coming from.
Well, you think he needs... They want Theo Walcott, don't they?
Yeah, and, you know, if from what the sounds that Walcott is making, he wants to play out the middle. That's where he sees his future. And it could be a really good fit for him at Everton, because he would be the main man. He wouldn't be marginalised. He is better than what they do have. So yeah, that could be a really good fit. You know, two new strikers, Cheng Tosun, Theo Walcott, classic big man, little man. I know you're a massive fan of that, John. So yeah, that could work out well. I think the early bounce that, you know, Allardyce has brought to the club, I think, you know, it's dawning on him just what a massive task it is at Everton now. I'll be very surprised if they don't make massive inroads into the transfer market. Not only players coming in, I think there's plenty that can be shipped out.
Another team struggling for goals at the moment, Chelsea, another 0-0 draw. I think that was now a 0-0 draw.
Third consecutive game.
In three competitions, isn't it?
That was the first time they'd ever done it in their history. Not obviously one to really sort of crow about, but but it was history.
Yeah, true. I mean, all credit to Leicester. They were really good. They probably should have won the game, but I mean, the champions' performance it was pretty uninspiring stuff. Hazard looked exhausted. Morata is struggling at the minute. Conte's not going to be too pleased with things, and probably the kind of people above him are probably even less pleased at the moment.
Yeah, it was a very lacklustre performance from Morata in particular. And what surprised me was how quickly the crowd got on the back of Hazard and Fabregas in particular. You know, they're your kind of three main guys, you would think, in terms of, you know, scoring goals and creating them. And Hazard, although nothing came off for him, he was certainly the only one trying, and the crowd were getting on his back. I was really surprised to hear that, but I wonder if that's a kind of broader frustration at the team's insipid displays rather than him personally. But yeah, Leicester were fantastic in that game. They were really unlucky not to come away with all 3 points.
Well, Harry Maguire at the back was fantastic, wasn't he? Supposed to be a target for Man City, but I mean, performances like that, you'd think that, I mean, Leicester would really want to keep hold of him at least until the end of the season.
Oh no, absolutely. Because Leicester sort of had a bit of a ropey start to season where they've kind of built up a bit of momentum, and they didn't have the greatest Christmas period. They've got Watford at home on Saturday, which should be a good chance to get another 3 points and really sort of push them up towards mid-table. And then who knows for the second half of the season. They're still in the FA Cup. And like a lot of mid-table teams who are probably going to be quite safe by March, it's about trying to work out building for the future. And
And
Maguire's done enough that he is in a lot of teams' radars. Like Lux, I would be amazed if City signed him this transfer window. They don't really need him. And it would be a bit depressing if they did, because I'm never a fan of clubs taking top players from other sides just to sort of fill your squad out and have the occasional, like,
sure.
The one that always bugs me is Steve Sidwell going back a few years. But that's the kind of thing. So from a, and possibly from an England point of view as well, with Harry Maguire, the more game time he gets, the better, because who knows in the second half of the season.
I think key for Leicester is keeping hold of Riyad Mahrez. You know, he's back showing the title-winning form of 2 years ago.
Yeah, under boring Claude Puel, who's actually turned them into a really exhilarating side, doesn't
he? Yes, he has.
Finally, something to cheer about for Alan Pardew as West Bromwich Albion manager. He finally got his first win under against Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yeah, it was long overdue. I think it ended a 20-match winless streak in the Premier League, didn't it? And I think, you know, some of their players, like... Yeah, it's a match for stats in terms of streak. I think it's been 301 days since Johnny Evans, who was on the score sheet, was on the winning side of a football team. And when you contrast that with, you know, City, like Fabian Delph, that was his first defeat in 20 games. So, you know, it just shows you just how, you know, how terrible the run that West Brom have been on. And obviously you won the FA Cup game last weekend as well. So there may be a little bit of momentum building. There's still plenty of work to be done, though. They're second bottom.
I was going to say, they're still in a lot of trouble, aren't they? I mean, one win is, you know, there's still plenty of work to
get
to. But
is that his first league win in eight? I mean, you think he took over, what, at the end of November? And, you know, whereas, yeah, we've just been discussing Allardyce and the initial, you know, bounce. Sorry, I hate that word. I just cannot think of another word to describe it. But, you know, that come in and make an instant impact on the team, and it hadn't happened for Pardew. And I don't think it was a case of building on him, but, you know, I don't think West Brom fans were largely inspired by his appointment, and it's certainly done him no harm, has it, picking up 3 points.
He's the only manager that's come in mid-season and not had at least some sort of immediate impact, doesn't he? I think if you look at Claude Puel, he's doing pretty well now. Allardyce,
you'd probably have to say, in fairness to him, he's got the hardest job of the lot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's the equivalent of a Sunderland Hospital pass last season, isn't it? That West Brom squad.
Well, Sorry, Graham.
I was going to say, and it's a crucial win for them. You look at the games they've got coming up in the league. They've got Everton away, City away, and Chelsea away in three of the next four games. So if they're not getting points at Brighton, then they'd have been in huge. Well, they'd have a good chance they'd be cut adrift by the start of March, and then it suddenly gets a hell of a lot harder.
Yeah, sure. Talking about managers that came in during the season and had an impact, David Moyes at West Ham. There's been some good results mixed with some pretty bad ones, but certainly this weekend was a good one.
Yeah, they were on fire in that game. 4-1 flattered Huddersfield. West Ham could have racked up a cricket score, and Marko Arnautovic was simply sensational. Nothing Huddersfield could do contained him. Scored one, was heavily involved in the other three, laying on for Manuel Lanzini. And Arnautovic can feel a little bit of grief that his teammate didn't at least put him through on two or three occasions in the first half to add to his own tally. But I think he epitomises Moyes' reign at the club, that there just seems to be a complete shift in approach to games. You know, his work rate is simply phenomenal now. You know, love to see the kilometres that he covers in games, because he's on fire. He's running all over the pitch. He's really putting in a shift for Moyes. So, you know, he's a player. You know, we all know what he can do from his time at Stoke. He's a very aggressive running player, and he's adding goals and assists to his game now, which is exactly what West Ham need.
It seems like a switch has been flicked for him, hasn't it? Because he looked, even for the first couple of games under Moyes, he looked kind of disinterested, low on confidence, whatever it might have been. And then all of a sudden, he said he's putting the yards in, and now he's sort of getting his rewards in terms of goals and, you know, game-changing contributions.
There was a cracking quote from Moyes on Saturday about him, which was, I think, paraphrasing, it was something along the lines of, if Marco runs, he plays. If he doesn't, he doesn't. Possibly hints at sort
so
of...
So eloquently.
Like the anti-Berbatov.
Yeah, it sort of hints at sort of, probably, as Steve just touched on, this work rate's there, mate. And Moyes, behind the scenes, is a real hard taskmaster and probably has gotten to him a little bit about the... If you put it in, you'll get it back. You're clearly good enough to do this. And so it was interesting to see that whether West Ham would have had this performance if they'd had Andy Carroll up front.
Yeah.
Because Carroll, obviously, continuing his tradition of not being able to last more than 90 minutes in a row without picking up at least one knock, missed out and sort of Moyes changed his formation. And this attacking, it clearly caught Huddersfield out. And it was a bit worrying for Huddersfield, again, to be turned over that emphatically.
Yeah, because Spurs put four past them as well, didn't they?
They've had a couple of these now.
That's going to happen, though, isn't it, for a side like Huddersfield? There's every now and again they're going to get slapped by a team, but they seem to be picking up results at the right time to kind of keep themselves ticking along there, don't they?
Yeah, you don't. I think it's against the teams you put it up. And again, no disrespect to West Ham, but West Ham shouldn't be going to too many grounds and putting four goals past you, despite us, you know, obviously lauding them and singing their praises just now. But yeah, I mean, as long as it doesn't become a trend, Huddersfield generally play good enough football to last in this division.
What else caught your eye this weekend? Watford's comeback against Southampton was good. They could have sunk at 2-0 down, couldn't they?
There's a lot of sort of bad feeling around the club at the moment, with the results have been poor pretty much since the middle of November. Since they won 3-0 at Newcastle, it was looking good then.
Since Silva got linked with the Everton job.
Well, it appears that not only was his head turned, but some of the players possibly have had their head turned as well. There's media reports of the weekend about a lot of the players were quite keen on going with him to Everton if it happened. It's an interesting, they've had a bit of bad luck with injuries, but that's the same, but all clubs have injuries and it's how you deal with it. But in a way, you can take heart from the fact that they got back into it. Obviously, quite a lot of controversy about the equaliser from Doucouré, because from my point of view, I don't think he deliberately meant to do it, but it did go in off his hand. And how the referee misses it, I'm not quite sure. And it wasn't an argument for the use of the virtual assistant referee, because if you know, or even using a review system or something for officials, because you know, if Southampton can challenge that, that gets chalked off immediately and they go home with extra points, which they needed just as badly as Watford, ironically. So it'll be interesting, because they meet in the FA Cup in a couple of weeks' time, and a few of the Southampton fans and players have had a few digs about this goal away, so it should have a little bit of taste of that FA Cup fourth round tie.
But it's amazing, isn't it, that, you know, Southampton, you know, they've got a bunch of non-scoring strikers, but Shane Long showed exactly what his qualities are. The way he raced away from the Watford defence to set up the two goals was fantastic. And yeah, it's very much points dropped by Southampton. They shouldn't be 2-0 up and throwing a game away like that.
Precious point for Swansea City at Newcastle, but still bottom.
Yeah, it's still not enough, eh? But you're saying that, we're talking about these teams are in trouble. I always think back to the position that Crystal Palace found themselves in after 7 games. And now look at them. They're flying up the table. They obviously had a great win at the weekend as well. So I think it does give sides down there hope that, you know, there can be a turnaround. If you can string together 5 or 6 games undefeated, your fortunes can suddenly turn for you.
Not strictly Premier League news, but let's finish the show on a couple of sort of bits of managerial speculation involving, I suppose, two former Premier League legends, I guess, for lack of a better word. Ryan Giggs is in line for the Wales job. Phil Neville as well for England's women's job. That kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it? Well,
I don't get that. I mean, I get Ryan Giggs in terms of the profile, and he's a Welshman, obviously. I don't think he's got, you know, he's always going to make the case that no one's taken a punt on him to give him managerial experience. But he's obviously a little bit precious and doesn't want to go outside the Premier League to go and get it. And Phil Neville, I just don't understand why you don't give the women's England job to a woman's coach. But yeah, I mean, they obviously come with a very, very good pedigree. No denying they were both fantastic players. So the Welsh and English FAs are going to hope to tap into that.
I think definitely with Giggs, there's a lesson for all of us. Perseverance pays off. Like, if you apply for enough jobs...
If you champion yourself enough times that you are worthy of it,
if you apply for enough jobs, you're going to get one eventually. So it's a gamble for Wales, and it's a difficult challenge for Giggs because they've just had, I think it's fair to say, probably their best period probably since the 50s with Chris Coleman in terms of sort of getting to a major championship, getting to a semi-final, going closer to qualifying for a World Cup. So there is expectation there now. This isn't like the Wales from probably 10, 15 years ago where just not drawing Moldova was seen as an achievement.
Yeah.
It'll be an interesting test for him. And part of me hopes he does do okay and sort of builds up from it, because it's always a shame to see great players flounder as coaches and such that. So he's had enough time with Ferguson, he must have picked something up.
As long as he doesn't play the type of football that typified Louis van Gaal's 2 years at Manchester United, then I think Wales fans will be happy.
Give ball to Bale, isn't it?
Yeah.
But just following on the Phil Neville side, I just can't understand it from any angle. I don't see what the women's FA get out of it. I can't, a manager with no experience, I can't see how he can launch his own managerial career with a move like that. It just all seems a little bit strange.
It is in keeping with how badly the English FA handle the women's football team, though, isn't
That's
it?
True. So, yeah.
But you never know. If he goes on to win games, then it'll be a great appointment, won't it? But yeah, it does seem very strange. Again, I wonder, you know, Phil Neville doesn't have the profile of a Ryan Giggs, but, you know, they've obviously interviewed him for the job, obviously liked what he had to say, so we shall have to wait and see.
As long as he's not a questionable character for his predecessor, then I suppose that's already a bonus, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, Jeps, thanks very much for your time this week.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, John.
Well, that's all we have time for this week's podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and on the National website at thenational.ae/sport. Thanks for listening.